the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Harris Show or check out my website, harrisonline.com. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me, and Colin Jeffrey joins us now for the Showbiz Show. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. Looking forward to Thanksgiving next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving movies coming out. It's always a good time for movies.
Yeah.
Especially family movies. I went and saw Moana this week. I can't talk about it yet, but that comes out Thanksgiving. So we'll
now,
talk
how,
about
how are we going to handle this? Because there are some movies opening next Wednesday. We're not going to be on next Friday because it's Thanksgiving and there's a Mizzou game on. And so I guess we'll have to play catch up at the beginning.
Just wherever you are at 4:15, start talking about movies. I'll do the same. And we'll do it that way.
All right. Well, we do have three movies to talk about today. You have one. I have two. Let's start with yours, which I think is going to be the big one at the box office this weekend.
I'd say that's fair. I have Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Now, is this related to Harry Potter in some
exactly.
way?
It's in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, but takes place in the 1920s in America as opposed to the UK. So some 60 years before Harry Potter is born and 70 or so years before he ever goes to Hogwarts.
Okay.
This, instead of focusing on Harry Potter, focuses on Eddie Redmayne, who plays a young British wizard who is coming to America. And he is a collector of fantastic beasts. Hey, see how they did that?
Mm-hmm.
And he has them all in a suitcase, all these magical creatures. But it's not any suitcase. It's a magical suitcase. Everything is magic in this. And what happens is he gets over here and goes one day to a bank where he bumps into Dan Fogler, who you have... You probably wouldn't recognize. He was in a ping pong movie called Balls of Fury from close to a decade ago.
No.
That was underrated. He's always a secondary character. Well, in this, he's sort of the buddy of the half of this. And they have very similar cases. So as you can imagine, what happens is they switch cases.
Mm-hmm.
And when Dan Fogler's character gets home, he opens up the case and
there
some
are fantastic beasts inside
waiting to get out. And they manage to escape. Well, that's that half of it. The other half is that while he's here, through some sort of level of magic bureaucracy, wizards are supposed to remain underground. And if you're familiar with the Potter movies, you're aware of that. The wizards are not, they don't live in the open. They have a special world they go
to. Caves or something?
Well, no, but they can't use their powers openly. There's all sorts of restrictions. Well, in America, it's even worse because it works better for the story.
I've looked at the Constitution. The word wizard does not appear in there.
It does not. That's a good point.
What was that? Wizarding bureaucracy, too? That
yes.
you used earlier?
Yeah, you're telling me there's wizarding red tape?
Yes, and it's actually really enjoyable when you see this. There's a big organization. It's like MACUSA, the Magic Alliance Congress of the United States. I don't know. It's something
Were they
ridiculous.
Protesting MACUSA?
No.
This wizard is not our wizard.
That's good.
But, of course, fantastic magical beasts are outlawed in the U.S. They can't be here because they wreck things. So
they're undocumented,
Newt,
having come with him.
Exactly. So Newt is, he runs afoul of the American wizard bureaucracy.
Okay.
But he gets some help from a couple disgraced members of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if this all sounds a little convoluted, it is because they're introducing you to Harry Potter's world, but several decades before and all new characters. And it's not about cute kids time traveling to do well in class and stuff. It's not what it's about. The last Harry Potter movie came out in 2011. Mm-hmm. It was directed by David Yates, who directs this film. His fans, the fans of Harry Potter movies, are in their 20s at least. And so they're saying, you know what? If we're going to go back to this, we need to make it more mature. And this accomplishes that. I was not a huge fan of the Harry Potter movies because... Like you call the snob every time I say this. Those were kids' books. They were kids' books. They were written for kids. Kids are supposed to enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. And it's okay if you want to. But they weren't particularly great movies because they were based off of what I viewed as kids' books. It's kids' literature. It's simple, not complex.
Okay.
This is a bit more complex in what it's sort of dealing with and the world that it opens up. This is not kids with relatively low stakes as it was early on in the Harry Potter movies.
Does this guy Newt have a lesbian sister?
No, that's a different Newt.
Oh, okay.
No, Dan. Do you want to tell us a joke anyway, Dan? No. Here's the joke.
No, he's talking about Newt Gingrich.
Yes, Gingrich.
I was waiting for a punchline, too.
No.
Dan was making a very good reference to Candace Gingrich, Newt's lesbian sister.
Yeah.
No, that is not, no.
Who at one point used to call into my show on a regular basis, and I named her the official lesbian of the Paul Harris Show.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
How about that?
We dated for a couple of years. I'm kidding. Oh. Not each other.
No. Yeah. Paul's a lesbian. I'm a lesbian. We like women.
Well, I think I have a lesbian inside of me because I'm attracted to women.
Yes. Completely derailed this whole Harry Potter thing.
Yeah, I don't know what...
What time is Colin getting here?
Yes. Hey, thanks, Paul. So I went to see the Wizarding World. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So to say that this is it's targeted at an older audience is fair, and I think it works. It's visually gorgeous as they're going to hunt down these beasts because they have to. They have to hunt down the creatures. That's what we were promised. But I sat next to Max here, and he's a big Harry Potter fan. Yep. I sat next to him at the screening. There are all sorts of inside jokes and references to characters that have yet to come, but there will be implications for the Harry Potter stories, it sounds like. There will be tie-ins, and you'll understand how things... So for those fans, it will work. For people who are not up on the lore, it also works very well, mm-hmm. I think. It's just kind of a fun, what I thought might be a standalone movie. However,
and there's always a however in life,
I found out after the fact that J.K. Rowling wrote this and she wrote the screenplay, handed it to them, and said, oh, this is 5 movies. And they're like, what are you talking about? 5 movies. You're crazy. And then they read it and they said, oh, yeah, it's 5 movies. So there's 5 of these.
So this is the beginning of a new franchise for her.
Yes.
Okay.
The beginning of a new franchise.
Is it a good beginning to the franchise?
It is. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Eddie Redmayne is the most charming person. Just the most charming actor. And he's just great. Mm-hmm. He's just so likable. And this is kind of a fun, quirky British role for him to play. So it's perfect. It's like a charming character and a charming actor. All of the supporting cast in this is very, very good, I thought. Colin Farrell plays kind of a enforcer for the Wizards of America. He's very good. Ezra Miller plays a creepy, what appears to be a secondary character. It's very well cast. It's gorgeous to look at. It's fun.
Dan has a question. Dan?
Is this based on a true story?
No. Sadly, no. Back to that. And if you're not a fan of the Harry Potter movies and you're willing to say, you know what, I'm going to jump into Wizards, and this is perfectly acceptable. And again, speaking as someone who only has a rough outline of what happens in Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
I still enjoyed it.
So you don't have to have gone to see the Harry Potter movies to enjoy this.
No, and it's a nice alternative to Doctor Strange that's out this week. And mm-hmm. I think that's why it will do well. It'll be interesting to see if it's going to be, I mean, it's not going to be as gangbusters. The Harry Potter films made almost $8 billion globally. Allow that to sink in, like almost $8 billion.
Wow.
So this is probably going to...
You're approaching Frank money there.
Yes. this is probably going to pull in, I think, a good $80 million this weekend, mm-hmm. and will do well again with the holiday weekend coming up.
Yeah.
I think, and I enjoyed it. I gave it a 7 out of 10 because it's fun, but it's not like a great movie, but it's a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it.
Will kids who have been Harry Potter fans...
Yeah,
tell their parents you got to take me to see this.
This is right in their wheel. They're not with their parents anymore. They're in their 20s now. I mean, granted, there's a new generation of Harry Potter fans, but Harry Potter fans from the originals are in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They will go see this.
Okay,
this is gonna be a good shot in the arm for them.
All right, so 7 out of 10 for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Now I have 2 movies to review, one good, one bad. Which one would you like to hear first?
I want to hear the good one first.
All right. The good one is called Loving, in which an actress you don't know named Ruth Negga and an actor who you probably don't know named Joel Edgerton, they play Mildred and Richard Loving, an interracial couple whose marriage led to a landmark Supreme Court decision. But the movie starts in 1958 when Mildred and Richard are a young couple in rural Virginia and they're in love. And they decide to get married and go up to D.C. to have a civil ceremony. But when they return home, they are awakened in the middle of the night by the sheriff and 2 deputies who arrest them for breaking Virginia's Racial Integrity Act, which had been on the books since 1924. The crime, called miscegenation, It's not a word that we know anymore because it's not around anymore. But at that time, it was still illegal in 24 states for a black person to marry a white person. And the judge gave Richard and Mildred Loving a choice. You can go to prison or you can get the hell out of Virginia and not come back here for at least 25 years. Now, I didn't know a judge could do that. Ban you from the state. But apparently, in 1958 Virginia, you could, and he did, and so they didn't want to go to prison, so they moved out of Virginia to Washington, D.C., and they stayed there for a few years, but they didn't like it, and they really wanted to go home. And they had no real options. At the same time, Dr. Martin Luther King was having the march on Washington in 1963. They are living there, not far away from there. They hear all about this. The Kennedys are in the White House. And Mildred Loving decides to write a letter to Bobby Kennedy, who was then our country's attorney general. And he wrote back. He didn't write back, but Bobby Kennedy decided that the White House couldn't get involved individually in their case. It was trying to handle civil rights things on a larger scale, but couldn't handle their case in particular. But he said the ACLU could. And so one day the phone rings, and it's this rookie attorney at the ACLU named Bernard Cohen, who'd been a lawyer for exactly 1 year. And he says, I think I can help you. I'd like to meet with you and help you. And he gets involved in their case, and then another young lawyer named Philip Hirschkopf gets involved, and the two of them represented the Lovings pro bono to fight the case. Eventually, they went back to Virginia, but kept their marriage quiet, stayed away from the police, had a house way out in the woods where nobody could see them and their life as they started having kids and started having a family there. This case that the ACLU filed on their behalf went all the way to the Supreme Court, which in 1967 overturned all the miscegenation laws in the United States. That decision was important in 1967 as the gay marriage decision was last year. It was essentially the Supreme Court saying the government has no business telling you who you can fall in love with and who you can marry. That they shouldn't be able to tell a white person they can't fall in love with a black person and vice versa. And that changed a lot of things, and that's why we have quite a bit of interracial marriage in this country now. I think it's between 12 and 15% of marriages now are interracial marriages. Now, about this movie, Ruth Negga, who plays Mildred Loving, and Joel Edgerton, who plays Richard Loving, are both really, really good in this. But they do it in a kind of quiet, dignified way. And I've done a little bit of research into this to find out if that's who these people really were. And the Lovings actually were shy, not very well-educated people. Neither of them had finished high school. They were just a couple who liked their rural life in Virginia and who liked each other and fell in love with each other. But they didn't know how to fight back against the sheriff and his deputies. They didn't have the legal wherewithal or the financial wherewithal to mount any kind of defense against this and turn it into a constitutional case. And the actors play them exactly the way they were. And all of that love and dignity comes through in their performances. You do not see the argument of the Supreme Court. You do not see the lawyers sitting in offices strategizing this. The movie is about Richard and Mildred Loving and how their relationship worked in the midst of this upheaval at the hands of a system that did not want them to be together.
So you saw Denial earlier this year.
Yes.
And that took a very different tact, talking about, you know, taking to task a Holocaust denier, where it showed everything.
Yes.
How do you think the two sort of compare in the way that they, because I think we look at both these today with our current standards and we're like, well, this is ridiculous. Like, who would do these things?
Yeah.
Did it impose like today's standards on that, or
no,
did it let sort of Virginia be Virginia in the 19?
It told it in the way it would have been in the late 50s and all the way through the late 60s. And it did it very, very well. You could easily have done this as a courtroom drama. I don't think it would have been as good. Because it's not the lawyers who make this movie. It's this couple. And it's these two actors.
How's Nick Kroll as the attorney? Because that's a comedian. And if you're not familiar with his stuff, I mean, he's a very...
He plays it completely straight. And he's very good as one of the lawyers.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it's very good. I give it an 8.5 out of 10.
Wow.
It's probably one of the better movies I've seen this
year. Oscar nominations for the two of them?
I think so. Certainly for Ruth. I don't know about for Joel.
And he was great in Black Mass. If you didn't see that last year, it was the story of Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, you liked that more than I did.
Well, I didn't particularly care for it, but he was very good in it. Joel Edgerton as the crooked FBI agent.
All right.
Is that who? Oh, yes. I like that, too, story of Whitey Bulger.
So that's one of the two movies I have for you this week. Loving, 8.5 out of 10. Then at the other end of the spectrum, there's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Now, this movie is going to get some attention because of the technology involved in it. This is directed by Ang Lee, who did Life of Pi.
So it's about going to the concession stand?
No.
I'd have to. Oh, no.
No. The technology part of this is that Ang Lee shot this movie at 120 frames per second.
Oh, yeah.
To put that in perspective, a regular movie is 24 frames per second. So he shot it at 5 times the normal speed, which makes it clearer, etc. I can't tell you how much clearer, because I don't live in New York, and I don't live in Los Angeles, and that's the only place where there are theaters with projectors that can show 120 frames per second. Here in St. Louis, you get the 24 frames per second, as will everybody else in the country. All of that talk about the technical stuff has nothing to do with the quality of the movie, but then again, there is no quality in this movie. Let me tell you the plot. In 2004, the lead character, Billy Lynn, played by an unknown actor named Joe Alwyn, he is home in Texas after doing a tour of duty with Bravo Company in Iraq. And while they were there, they had a traumatic experience on the battlefield fighting Al-Qaeda, in which one of their own, played by Vin Diesel, died. Well, now they're home and they're in Texas, and he and the other members of Bravo have been invited to be part of the halftime show at a Cowboys game on Thanksgiving. Part of the halftime show with Destiny's Child, which in 2004 still had Beyoncé in it. And you think, wow, they got Beyoncé and the other women in Destiny's Child to be in this movie? No. You never see the faces of the women who are supposedly Destiny's Child. You only see them from behind as the soldiers are forced to go out there and be behind them on the stage. They are being exploited, as we've talked so many times about the NFL being able to exploit the whole soldiers at war thing. Even charging the military for the salute to the soldiers weeks that they do. Last weekend was just one of them. You know, anytime they have those at the stadiums, the NFL charges the military for that. It's ridiculous. Well, this was yet more exploitation of the military by the NFL to sell a war that, you know, the government wanted you to believe was worth it. Kristen Stewart is in the movie, too. She plays Billy's sister, who opposes the war, does not want him going back to Iraq. She's suffering from cancer, says, if you go back, I'm not even going to go through the chemotherapy. I'm just going to kill myself. So you have that melodrama in there. At the football game, Billy meets a Cowboys cheerleader named Faison, played by an actress named Mackenzie Lee. And I'm saying that name again, Mackenzie Lee, because Mackenzie Lee is the worst actress I've seen on the screen for 30 years.
Wow.
I got to go back to, remember when Brian Brown made a movie in 1986 called FX, where he's a special effects guy, he helps out the FBI, Jerry Orbach was in it, Mason Adams, a bunch of other people, Brian Dennehy.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Brown's assistant in that movie was played by an actress named Martha Gaiman, who, up until today, was the worst actress I've ever seen in a major motion picture. Nope. You're off the hook now, Martha. Mackenzie Lee now has the title. She's horrible. Steve Martin is in this movie, too. Horribly miscast, doing a bad Texas accent as the owner of the Cowboys. Now, we all know that's really Jerry Jones. Steve Martin doesn't look like Jerry Jones, doesn't act like Jerry Jones. They don't call him Jerry Jones. And Steve Martin can't do a Texas accent.
They both have white hair.
That's about all that they have in common. And at the same time, there's an agent played by Chris Tucker who's trying to get the soldier's story turned into a movie, even though the story of what happened isn't really all that compelling. And ironically, if this were a true story, Dan, the guys in the platoon would not be happy with the movie that Ang Lee has actually made about their adventure.
What a jerk.
This is one of the worst movies of the year. It barely gets a 2 out of 10.
Wow.
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Don't be fooled by the commercials that make it look like, oh, we're honoring our soldiers for what they've done overseas. No. This is a movie that exploits the soldiers just as much as the characters in the movie do, and it is a piece of trash.
Fun.
Don't see it. So, recapping again. 7 out of 10 for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. 8.5 out of 10 for Loving. barely a 2 out of 10 for Billy Lynn's long halftime walk. That's all the time we have for showbiz stuff this week, because we have Kathleen Madigan.
Yes.
St. Louis stand-up comedy legend, who's got a new Netflix special. She's coming up next here on the Big 550 KTRS.